This is Rabbi G, and welcome to Harvard God and Gen Z. The goal of this podcast is to discuss life's big questions with some of America's brightest young minds. We will discuss Harvard's continued sway on the imagination as the peak of success. We will discuss how to get there and what it is like when you do. We will then shift to discuss if and in what ways meaning and God are relevant features of Gen Z. What better place than Harvard for discussing these issues with the thought leaders of tomorrow?
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We have an amazing, amazing guest. We have Ellie Leugman, very recent, fresh off the Harvard conveyor belt, just graduated. 2000 class of 2021 from Harvard, majored in history and literature, heading to Washington, D.C. to work for Sullivan and Cromwell as a paralegal. So we're going to miss her here in Boston. But before we let her go, we're going to try to grab some insights on her experience here at Harvard and see how we do. So welcome, Ellie.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Okay, wonderful. So let's just take it from the top a little bit. So where did you grow up, Ellie?
I grew up in Chappaqua, New York, which is about an hour, give or take, north of Manhattan.
Beautiful. So as you know, Harvard's not exactly the standard college. Did you come from an academic family? Was education something that was really stressed in your family? How did you exactly end up at Harvard?
Yeah, so my parents are both, I would say, academic. My mom went to Harvard, but so it was sort of on my radar because of that, but wasn't really something that I considered seriously until it came time for me to apply to colleges. But my mom is actually a historical fiction author, so that's fun. And my dad
is that why you majored in history and lit? Is that what we're understanding over here?
No, I would say I'm much more the history than the literature side. And she would much more be the literature side, but she did not study history and literature. She just studied English.
And where can we get your mother's books if we wanted to read one of them?
Everywhere. Barnes and Noble.
Oh wow. Does she Amazon. Go is it Leugman on the is it she go by Leugman or a different name?
Yeah, Linda Cohen Leugman.
Okay. We will look out for that. That sounds amazing. So you're telling me you didn't put much pressure on yourself to get into Harvard, or what motivated you to work hard and do well? Was that just something that you were naturally motivated for, or from some sort of pressure? Well, what do you think motivated you to strive to be the best?
I think it was a lot of intrinsic motivation. Yeah. So I did put a lot of pressure on myself in high school and when I was younger. I think a lot of it, I did go to public high school, but it was a competitive high school regardless. But I do think a lot of the pressure that I put on myself came from participating in theater growing up, because at least twice a year, if not more, we would have auditions, which was competing with everyone that I knew in the theater program for parts. And so that took a lot of self-improvement and time and work in order
to... How did you take failure at that stage when you didn't get the part? Or did you always get the part?
I rarely did. I did a few times, which was very exciting.
What was your best part? What was your favorite part?
My favorite part? Probably Cinderella in Into the Woods, which I played my senior year of high school. That was very fun. But I think I took failure. I definitely beat myself up because it's hard, you know, when you're directly competing with your friends. But I also just worked really hard at trying to be as good as I possibly could be.
And what does that mean? Does that mean like impressions in the mirror? What kind of work are we talking about when it comes to theater?
Well, I mean, I don't actually do theater anymore, but at the time I would go to acting classes. I would go to voice lessons. I would try to dance. That was a disaster. So
you can talk to my wife. She can help out with it.
Yeah. So those three things, you know, just constantly working at that. I think for some people, it came a lot more naturally, but it took a very long time for me to be comfortable on stage.
That's amazing that you push yourself. It's an incredible story that basically learning to fail from theater, working hard, competing, and that somehow trickled over to the rest of your life, to other parts of your life.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's tough, right? Because it's a lot of rejection and a lot of, oh, you're not good enough at this yet, but you could be if you do these things differently. So I think that lesson sort of carried over.
That's beautiful. And so we call the growth mindset. Did that growth mindset stay with you throughout college, or was there ever a moment where you felt you were tired of failing, or it was kind of harder at Harvard to fail around all these perfectionists around you?
Yeah. I mean, I think in some respects, the growth mindset stayed with me, but then in other areas of my life sort of dissipated. So just to follow this direct theater through line, after freshman year, I quit because I didn't get into anything, which is okay because I didn't think that I would necessarily. And I didn't think, you know, that theater was something that I wanted to pursue long term. So I was disappointed about that, but I was eager to try new things in college anyways. And I think that I used the lessons that I learned from acting class and applied them to the classroom, to my everyday life, to my relationships. And I think my biggest sort of takeaway from Harvard is just the people that I've met and the different perspectives that I've learned about. So I think that definitely ties into the growth mindset, if that answers the question.
Certainly. So you're telling me the best part of Harvard is not necessarily the professors, not necessarily the classes, but the people that you're around. What made the people around you so special? What did you feel you picked up? What perspectives?
Sure. So my hometown of Chappaqua was pretty homogenous. Everyone was, not everyone, but most people were pretty financially comfortable. And there were a lot of people who were Jewish, but pretty secular. So when I came to college, I was introduced to people from so many diverse backgrounds, which was amazing. I learned so much from all of them. So there was that. And then just in the classroom, I think, learning about people's perspectives and writing styles and the way that they just thought about things. I feel like being surrounded by such smart people every day has to rub off on you a little bit, or at least you hope it does.
Certainly. So when you say, I understand that, you know, coming from what sounds like a pretty monolithic background of wealthy, maybe secular, many secular Jews and whatnot, and then coming to college, seeing a diverse group, is it, what would you say, besides just exposure to new things, can you point to an idea or a way of life that you've incorporated from the people around you that's different?
Yeah, well, okay. So I think one funny thing is because I grew up in a pretty Jewish community, I didn't really think about Judaism at all because it was always just kind of there. So when I went to college, I was the only person in my freshman dorm who was Jewish, and people were asking, you know, would ask me questions about it. And I found myself not necessarily being able to explain things because I sort of took that aspect of my life for granted or didn't really pay that much attention to it.
Any questions you can remember? Any funny questions you got?
Well, someone asked me what was a menorah because I had one in my dorm.
Okay.
So, that's a good question. So that was kind of funny. It was
That's a home run. You got that one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
So that was a good one. But someone asked me like, what are all the holidays? And
that's tough.
I was like, there is no way that I know all the holidays, but I think it made me critically consider my relationship to Judaism. And if anything, like allowed me to become more connected to it through organizations like Mayor and the Aleph. So because of that, I think, yeah, I had to sort of consciously choose to engage with that community.
So once you're in a less Jewish environment, in other words, you now were forced with the realization that Judaism is not going to be automatic.
Yeah. And it wasn't even that like all of my friends from college or even most of them were Jewish. It was just that when I did celebrate the Jewish holidays or Jewish activities like Shabbat, it was something that was more meaningful because it wasn't something that I just took for granted.
Okay, great. So that's a great segue, I suppose. So going back, so what kind of concepts of Judaism, maybe just spirituality at large, would you say you were educated with growing up? Did God ever come up in your family, or just kind of Jewish culture, tradition? What were the things that you had?
Yeah, I think it was mostly cultural. My religious education was mostly cultural. I did go to Hebrew school. I was bat mitzvah. So definitely talked about God and the stories from the Torah, but I didn't, I don't think that my parents were super religious. My mom definitely more religious than my dad. So because of that, it wasn't expected of me to, you know, like ardently believe everything that I learned in Hebrew school or to go to synagogue like every week or anything. We would go mostly for special occasions.
And those high holiday moments, were those positive moments for you or kind of a drag?
It depended on the year. Depended on how hungry I was during Yom Kippur. But yeah, no, they were mostly positive. I think the one thing that my family stressed when it came to the holidays was community. It was a time for our families to gather, get to see each other, my cousins, my grandparents, and that didn't happen every single day. So that was always special.
So you'd say the Judaism you grew up with was mostly community-based and family-based. That was kind of the emphasis.
Yeah.
And then in college, because of the, you were all of a sudden not surrounded by it, you were kind of forced to make more of an intellectual.
Yes, but I do still think that it remains, for me at least, to be pretty community-based and focused on the people, you know, with whom I share the holidays rather than the like very like traditional versions of the holidays.
Now, do you think that when you say community-based, do you think that's uniquely Jewish or just there's something unique about Jewish community, or, you know, every culture has its community? And I think for, you know, I relate to the community of the Jewish culture, I suppose.
You know, I don't know because I haven't been in other religious communities. So I'm sure that it's pretty similar. In terms of having your own food and holidays and even just mentalities and funny expressions. So I'd like to think that there's things that are special about Judaism, but it's difficult to say, oh yes, this is a completely unique religion or experience.
Is there anything about Judaism you find unique?
I think it's unique in that, well, in the way that it is taught, you know, Hebrew is sort of supposed to be the connecting factor. You know, when we were learning in Hebrew school growing up, they would always say to us, you can go into a synagogue anywhere and know what everyone's talking about, versus for other religions, that's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. However, I must confess, I do not speak Hebrew. So this is not something that I am lucky enough to experience, but maybe one day.
You're actually raising a very good point. The little question that the American Jewish community is really the first community that's lost its Jewish language in Europe. Even if they didn't speak Hebrew, they had Yiddish. And not having a language for religion is actually very detrimental. This Rabbi Wolpe from Los Angeles, he discusses a very interesting point that, you know, when an American Jew hears the word God, his framework for God is really Christian in a certain way, or faith. Faith is a Christian word in a certain way. So we don't have the language of our spirituality, and that actually creates a barrier because everything we relate to is almost has a different flavor to it. I remember myself growing up, you know, before I was too religiously engaged, whenever a pro sports player would thank God, I kind of cringed and I was like, why are you bringing up spiritual, you know, religion into the arena? It felt very cliche. But so, yeah, I agree with you. I think language is a big thing and it's hard to connect without it. And did you grow up with a belief in God or the idea of God? Was that very natural for you? Something you didn't think about much?
I think I definitely grew up with the idea of God, but not necessarily a belief. I don't really know whether or not no one ever said to me, you have to believe in God.
What is your intuition about it? And how do you think about it? And do you think it's an important question to answer? whether there is a God or not a God.
Yeah. See, I don't know, because sometimes there are questions that we just can't know the answers to. So maybe it doesn't really matter if we know or not, because they won't affect the way that we live our lives. But in this case, they would, because if you believe that there's a God, you might live differently than if you believe that there isn't one. I don't know. I hope that there is. That'd be great, but I don't know.
When you say that would be great, what would you think would be great about
it? It's having someone sort of watching over you and everyone, and sort of wanting the best for the world. But that seems,
so it's kind of God the parent,
like a far stretch for me. I am skeptical.
What do you think is the thing that makes it difficult for you when you say a far stretch? What's the part that makes it difficult to think like about such a being?
Well, I have not seen concrete evidence, so that makes it difficult. But I also have not seen concrete evidence that there is not, so that so the answer is inconclusive.
So the question is, so let me give you a thought experiment. If you see an object in front of you, mm-hmm. any object that is, would you say that object created itself?
Let's no. Say
right. So let's say you saw an iPhone.
Would you say, right. Oh, yeah, definitely iPhone. Not.
You would say someone designed it in San Francisco. And would that count as evidence that, you know, if you see an object that, oh, there's evidence that, you know, there's something that made this thing.
I guess so.
So the question becomes, is the fact that there's anything at all itself a type of evidence? Since nothing physical creates itself, would that be evidence that there's a creator? Because in other words, what I'm asking is right, it a I logical mean, there, belief to think that something comes from nothing?
There could be, but then there's also, you know, the scientific theories about just the evolution of life that I'm not super well versed in. But yeah, for me, I think inconclusive it is.
In other words, no, but the way life happened, I agree with you, might, there's different forms of it, but the fact that there's matter at all, any physical matter, I'm just asking in your framework, does that count as some evidence? Oh, there's something here. How did mm-hmm. it get here? Does that count as some type of an evidence? Oh, it must be coming from
something else.
It got here somewhere.
I guess so. If you go back to, you know, the beginning of absolutely everything, but I still don't know. I don't think I can say definitively.
Okay, I hear that. Yeah, so what I'm sharing with you is kind of the argument from Maimonides and Aristotle, the idea that there must have been a first cause, something that started it all. If mm-hmm. not, how could we have anything at all if there right. wasn't something at the beginning to kind of get the ball rolling, so to speak? So that's how some people think about it. But you're right, it's a thought experiment. So that might, you know, I think in our scientific lens, our standards for what's called evidence has changed. And sometimes people feel that they need a certain type of evidence to count as evidence. And I think that's where things kind of get interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that there can be meaning, objective meaning, if there's no God per se?
Can you clarify that?
Yeah, like what makes, I guess we'll ask more generally, what to you, how would you define what meaning is, and what to you make something meaningful?
I think you would define meaning based on the feeling that it evokes. If something is meaningful, then it makes you feel a certain way. If something, it becomes easier to define whether or not something has meaning based on the meaningless things, right? So if something doesn't make you feel any different or reflect, it's just kind of happening and it's not a big deal, then that would be the opposite of meaning. If something causes you to reflect and think about your life differently or just to appreciate your life, then I think it has meaning.
Right. So can you give an example of that? Something that could cause a reflection or a different way of looking at life?
Yeah, I think honestly, even some of my classes have been really meaningful. So I've sort of entered them thinking, oh, this is just going to be a requirement, and then left thinking about the world in a different way, just based on the types of writing that I've read or the people in the class who I've learned from.
Interesting. So it sounds like meaning for you is anything that changes you in some way or causes you to grow in some dimension or see something different that creates a certain meaning. And I think that's interesting. I think there's a school of thought like that, that what's meaningful in life is the evolution of life, or the growth of life is what makes life meaningful. I think Judaism has a piece of that. I think Judaism adds that the aspect that for something to be meaningful, it needs to last. It has to have some an everlasting quality to it. Do you think that's some a concept that makes that that makes sense in terms of the fact that if something ends at some point and disappears, it kind of, so what was it all for, you know, in a certain way?
I mean, I think that things can be meaningful that don't last forever, right? Like, what about people, relationships with people? You can, they can end, whether it be like a friendship or a romantic relationship, or someone moves away or anything, just the relationship doesn't stay. That doesn't mean that it was for nothing, right? It's about what you learned from that person during the course of your relationship.
But that learning stays with you.
So right.
The reason why it's meaningful is not because the person is not there anymore. What's meaningful about it is the fact that you took something from it to go.
And right, but it wasn't, I feel like that makes it sound like it's really transactional when it's, when I don't think it has to be that way. You can have things not last forever, like college doesn't last forever. You learn things from college, they stay with you for the rest of your life. And again, you would say, oh, it's the what you learn that is what matters and what had meaning. It didn't matter that it was the college, but you could have sentiment attached to the college and the place and the buildings that don't necessarily stay with you.
Well, in what way would you say that? That doesn't stay with you? In other words, if you have the memories or you have the feelings that it evoked, I guess it would still kind of be with you.
Right. But so I might feel a different way looking at Dunster House now than I will in 20 years when I go back, right? It's not, I'm not going to feel the same way. But that still is a place that had meaning. And like, I don't think that it matters whether or not.
But what do you feel the same? What do you think an interaction? I hear that, but what do you think an interaction that you don't, you know, you didn't learn anything from it? It just was an interaction.
Right. Then maybe not. Not everything has to have meaning.
Right. Okay. So you would agree that an interaction that you don't take with you would necessarily be meaningful. But I guess the question is, can we define meaning as something that lasts? If that's a good working definition of what meaning is, something a lasting, something taking a moment and making it last. And obviously there's different levels of lasting throughout a lifetime, perhaps, versus lasting beyond that. Do you think that that meaning is an important thing in people's lives today?
I hope so. I know. I think it is. I think, you know, without meaning, people don't have meaningful relationships or experiences. And I think that people do. So I would say yes.
And what do you think, as moving forward now as a college grad, what are you hoping, what are your goals in life? How would you articulate what your goals are in life moving forward?
My goals in life. Well, that is a loaded question, but I think, first of all, I want to be happy. It's important.
Would you say happiness is a goal or kind of a side effect?
I think it's a goal. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with having it be, you know, if you're saying a goal for me is to make sure that I'm happy, then constantly sort of, not constantly, but consciously like checking in, is what I'm doing making me happy? Are the people that I'm surrounded by making me happy? Is important. So I think it can be a goal. And also it's an effect of, oh, if those things are true, then you will feel that way. So I would say that's the
goal of one is to be happy. Okay. And do you know what makes you happy? Are you clear on the kind of the steps you need to take to reach that goal?
I don't know. No, but we're going to find out. I think also to continue learning. I loved college because I was able to learn so much about myself, about other people, and just about the world. And I don't want to stop learning after graduating. You know, I'm hoping to go back to law school. I want to make a difference. I hope to, you know, do some type of public interest law one day. So I think having a meaningful,
And you want to make a difference because it makes you happy, or because you want to make a difference?
Because I want to make a difference, and then doing that will then make me feel fulfilled, which will then make me feel happy, right? So it's sort of, they're all interconnected, but it's not for personal gain necessarily. So that, and then one thing that I want to do is I want to read more books, because I've read a lot of books in the past 4 years, but they were all pretty, you know, academic or theoretical texts for the most part. So I want to read novels. That's something that I really loved doing as a kid. And I'm excited to get back into that as, you know, a hobby.
Beautiful. So learning, making a difference, striving to be happy. And those are kind of your main missions moving forward.
Not for now.
Okay. That's all good goals. And I guess just to wrap up, did you find that people at Harvard were generally happy? Was it an easy place to be happy?
I don't think that it's necessarily an easy place to be happy, because it's difficult to be there, because everyone comes from, you know, having been very accomplished in high school, which is kind of ridiculous if you think about it, like 15-year-olds being really accomplished. What does that even mean? But I think that people who focus on other people and relationships rather than just being self-involved or focused on things just for their resume, I think that those people are happy. And I was really lucky to, you know, find a community of people who shared values with me and, you know, like spending time with other people and not just pee setting. Not that that's a bad thing. So I think the people that I interacted with were happy to be there, usually, not always, of course.
Nice. So in other words, it wasn't just the pursuit of success that makes people happy. That seems to be clear to you, is not the path to happiness. But it sounds like having meaningful experiences and doing things that aren't just geared towards success are keys to creating a happy life.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, wonderful, Ellie. Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom about your college experience, what you're hoping to gain, and your thoughts on life. And we wish you much success in trying to achieve all of these beautiful goals of making a difference and attaining happiness.
And well, thank you.
We'll do our best to help in any way we can, of course.
thank you.
From a distance, and try to create more fulfilling experiences that create that joy.
Thank you so much for having me.